So the details are seeping from USDA to the countryside on how payments will be calculated for direct payments from coronavirus aid package. And there's a fair amount of grumbling happening. I don't know what the right answer is, but I'm not sure the answer we got was the answer many were looking for.
Live from a basement office bathed in the warm glow of computer screens via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we feature a conversation with Don Rose from U.S. Commodities. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
You know, after you get bathed in the glow of those computer monitors, you might come out of the basement clear.
You think?
It's possible.
Like transparent?
Yes, like Ooh. Absence of any and all color.
You know what's weird is what? I've got special glasses that protect my eyes, you know, reading glasses.
Yeah.
So maybe just my eyes will be visible. I might have to walk around with a blindfold on. I don't know. I'm like the invisible man now.
And the
I'm
invisible man with a just a set of eyeballs out there walking around.
That's creepy. That would
it
freak
is.
People out.
It is. You know what else might be considered a little creepy?
What's that?
Well, if you sold out, I mean, just sold out of last year's corn and soybean crops and had no inventory sitting in place for the calculation period, as things stand, mm-hmm. and as I understand them, there's no soup for you.
Really?
In this coronavirus aid package. Yeah. So
you're saying if you are 100% sold on your old crop supplies, you're out
during the calculation period, okay? Which is what? It starts January 15. Yeah. So if you were sold out of last year's grain by January 15, as I understand, and listen, I've got to go through the details better than what I have. To get a better understanding of it, but the way things look right now, yeah. If you were sold out of last year's inventory by January 15th, there may not be a CFAP, the payment from USDA. There may not be a CFAP payment.
Speculate for us. It's probably unfair to ask you this. Can you ballpark maybe a percentage of growers that you're talking about there?
I think it's probably pretty low, but I can't say that with a lot of confidence.
My feeling is it's probably pretty low as well.
Right, right. But it's going to be the lower of one of two things. It's capped at half of last year's production. So if you grew 100,000 bushels, the most payment that you could get is at 50,000 bushel, but it's that inventory level after Jan 15 before May 14. It's that inventory level that will determine what the payment was. So if you've got 75,000 bushel in the bin of 100,000 bushel crop, the most that your payment could be is on 50,000 bushels. Okay. But if you are down to say 10,000 bushels of corn in the bin between or after Jan 15, then the payment is on 10,000 bushel. It's not on the 50. So it's smaller of those two numbers. Then on the cattle side of things, I don't think there's anything there for the cow calf guy, for the backgrounder. It looks to me like it is cattle.
Okay.
So I don't know, man.
Wow.
I'm struggling getting my head wrapped around some of these details, because when you think to yourself, no, that can't be right.
Right.
It makes it difficult to accept what you are reading. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get to some of the news here.
Yeah, we better. As of May 17, USDA says 60% of the U.S. spring wheat crop was seeded. Chip, that's well behind the five-year average of 80%. Furthest behind is the biggest spring wheat production state, North Dakota. Just 41% of the crop planted. That's behind the five-year average pace of 76% planted. Also, just 13% of the North Dakota spring wheat crop has emerged compared to the five-year average of 37%. USDA now rates 52% of the winter wheat crop in good to excellent condition, down from 53% last week. The winter wheat crop rated poor to very poor is unchanged on the week, 16%. July hard red winter wheat was 3.5 cents higher, 508 1/4. July soft red fell 4 3/4, 441 1/2. July spring wheat gained 3.5 cents, 508 1/4, Chip.
But we'll see what Don Rose from U.S. Commodities thinks about potential export demand for wheat coming up here in just a little bit.
Ongoing speculation that China will rebuild its state-owned reserves of corn with U.S. supplies provided support for futures early in the session. By the close, that story was growing stale, allowing corn prices to slip back from session highs. Support for corn prices was also pulled from gains in the energy markets and ideas that corn for ethanol use is digging out of the hole that was dug by the COVID-19 shutdowns. July futures traded to the highest level since April 24 today, but the low-range close sucked prices back into the month-long sideways trading range. July corn futures 0.5 cent higher, 321 1/4. September firmed 1¼, 325 1/2. Dec closed at 334 1/4, up 1.5 cents today. Chip?
Yeah, not much going on. Stuck in that sideways trading range.
Bean plantings as of May 17 pushed past half done, 53% there, compares to the five-year average of 38% done. Early in the session, bean prices were under pressure as traders spread long corn against short soybeans. July bean futures ended 2.5 cents lower, 842 1/2. August slipped 2.5, 845 1/4. Novi bean futures closed at 850 1/4, down 2.5 cents on your November beans, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's go ahead and get to Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. How you doing today, Joe?
Good. How you doing, Chip? Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that. Hey, so was there some spreading going on between corn and soybeans? I saw a few comments on that. I don't know. I mean, or is that just a story based on market action rather than market action based on happening?
Yeah, I'd probably take the latter. I don't know that there's much of a spread trade going on there. This is just kind of a lackluster session. You know, the news has been kind of slow, or maybe more so the markets have just been slow. We've been kind of range-bound. We've got evidence of maybe some better demand, but I don't know. We don't have crop problems.
Yeah, when you got 80% of the corn crop planted.
Well, I'm not going to say that to everybody because there are crop problems, but not enough of them, put it that way.
Yeah, that's a good save right there because some of the guys over in the Eastern Belt that are looking at 6 inches of water.
Yeah, I don't want to upset everybody. And you know, North Dakota is part of South Dakota, too. I know there's issues out there, but, you know, grand scheme of things, pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Do fundamentals even matter to what's going on in cattle and hogs, Joe?
Oh, sure they do. The market's out of whack. You know, you got the futures board doing its own thing, the cash cattle market doing its own thing. The box beef market doing a completely different thing. We just like to see it return to some state of normalcy. And I think that, you know, reopening the economy in a broader way probably gets you there. And it's just a matter of time, I think, in my opinion. And the same goes for ethanol. It's along the same lines.
Very good. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Yep. See you, Chip. Bye.
All right. That's Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. July cotton 140 points higher at 59.20. Dec cotton up 124 to 59.17. June live cattle nickel higher, 98.77 1/2. August cattle up 22 1/2, 99.07. June lean hogs buck lower, 56.65. July hogs fell 137 1/2 to 56.27 1/2. We've got Don Rose, U.S. Commodities, up next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I am Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
10-4.
Yeah, we'd love for you to pick up the phone, give us a call today. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and when you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way, yeah, I'll be sure to see it. We love you too, AgriKitty.
Aww.
Aww. All right, let's bring in Don Rose. Don is with U.S. Commodities out of West Des Moines, Iowa. Don, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, just doing fine, Chip. Glad to be back, and I guess it's your birthday, so I'll wish you a happy birthday.
Well, yeah, it was yesterday. I feel I feel like a brand new man, Don.
That's very good.
Yeah, well, and it's like I told people yesterday, you know, it's a lot better than the alternatives, getting another year older.
Yep, you don't want to take a dirt nap.
Not yet, not yet. Too much to do, too much to do. So, man, Don, where do you want to start? It feels like on the grain side of things, and Joe made reference to it, we've just recently here, we've kind of sucked the volatility right out of the markets, haven't we?
Well, you know, I think when you step back from the market, you know, look at it overall, the market kind of went down, locked down, as the whole economy's locked down, not only in the U.S. but around the world. Yeah. Remember, we had crude oil went to a negative $39, $40 a barrel. That was kind of the epicenter of everything. But then since that time frame, as we unlocked, the markets have gradually been moving back up. We've had, you know, ethanol, petrol grains took us down, helped push us down, pushed us back up here now. So I would say that you look at all of the commodities, even the equity markets across the board, we kind of are anticipating that we're going to move back to something better than what we had. You know, now the question mark is, as we unthaw, what's it really look like coming out the other end? So for right now, we've just reached a base level. We're going to see if we can get a catalyst to push up. But the corn, which has been the worst, is kind of turning into something to find some support here, Chip.
Yeah, there are people across the countryside sighing a breath of relief and hoping that, yes, we have put a base into this market. You sound pretty confident in that statement, Don.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think when you look at it, the producer's not interested in selling at these levels on new crop. If you stop and think about it, he's got his insurance levels on new crop going down. So that isolates you to the old crop supplies that are yet to move. And it looks like to us that we just were thrown out with some new programs to help support the market for people that have been hurt by the coronavirus. I think you guys alluded to it a little bit, but, you know, looks like there's some money coming at people, and that's going to help, you know, stabilize things here also.
Yeah. Well, and if it is what I think it is, it probably shuts the bin doors even tighter.
I think that's what it does. I mean, you know, because on the program, they're talking about $250,000 per person or entity for all commodities combined. So, you know, and whether you're talking grain or livestock, it looks like the slaughter, you know, you have cattle, you have up to get $247, the feeder cattle, $171, feeder cattle less than 600 pounds, $135. And, you know, the beat goes on. Pigs under 120 pounds, $45, and, you know, under over 120, $35. So it looks like the grain and the livestock both are going to get some help here, and I think that just helps stabilize stuff.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I also like your reference to what things look like when we come out the other side of this, Don. And your comments about the ethanol and the energy markets, a lot of how corn is going to recover is going to be based on that energy component of the market, isn't it?
Well, it is. You know, when you have 39% of your total demand comes from ethanol corn use, but then remember, you know, a big percentage of that, 32, 33 pounds out of the 56 pounds is DDG. So livestock feeding is not that efficient right now, and so we're using more corn than we did before. But most definitely, ethanol is a big component. And, you know, how these markets work, Chip, at least in my experience, is you run the markets down on the worst news that you have, and then we usually overdo it. Then we, at low prices, demand increases, supplies decrease somehow, and you stabilize and move back up. So I think we have to watch the ethanol component, but, you know, maybe our exports on ethanol pick up, maybe the driving picks up more than we think. But I think we've seen the worst, at least short term.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. What are you watching most closely in the energies, Don? What would signal to you that, by golly, maybe we're getting back to within 90% of what we were pre-COVID on energy use?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, you look at the supply side. You know, and it's different than we have in production agriculture, grain farming. If you're producing crude oil, you don't have to pull it out of the ground. I mean, you can just slow down production. You can stop production, you know, much easier than you can in some of these other things. So I think the first thing is, and we're seeing that right now, the production slowed down, 10%. So gradually you start to see the supply tighten, and then you see, the price move up. And I think as we unthaw out here, you know, the gas consumption could be bigger than we think. You know, people are, looks like the airline travel is going to be less, so maybe we compensate it with driving. So I think, you know, your question is, what are we going to watch? I think we're going to watch the driving close here.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot to that right there. I would love it, Don, if we could get our daily ethanol production back up to, even 900,000 barrels a day, which would be a couple hundred thousand barrels off the peak of the year. But is that kind of a recovery possible in here?
Well, you know, I think when you look at the ethanol demand right now, I think we got down to, a level that we were down 40-50% on our ethanol production. So it's going to take a while for that to recover, Chip. And I think even the government, they were pretty liberal with 4.95 billion bushels of corn usage here for the rest of this year. You know, unfortunately, that could be down, not to talk too negative, but that could be down to, 4.6 billion or something like that.
Yeah.
We could be 350 million short. So, I don't think it's the numbers that we're looking at right now probably have to improve. There's no doubt about it, but we can do it too at lower prices. You're supposed to use more with lower prices, and I think you probably do.
Okay. All right. Safrina corn crop down in Brazil. How's it doing?
Well, I think overall they got clipped at the end of their growing season. Surprising the last government report, they actually took the crop up. I doubt it. From what we pick up with people on the ground, that crop is probably, the government's probably too high by a couple, 3 million metric tons. Is 100, 120 million bushels going to make that big of a difference in the world environment? Not really. But I think the important thing there is we're 40% harvested on Argentina's corn crop now. That's going to be coming at us here in June, July, August, and then July we're going to have Brazil's crop coming at us, and I think it's just bigger supplies, more competition. They're over us right now in Argentina by about 20, 30 cents for August, September.
Okay. Yeah, that's good news right there. But, boy, the currency issues are playing heck with us trying to get competitive in some of these markets right now, isn't it?
Well, that is it. That's the beat goes on. I mean, look at the real in Brazil's just off of a record low. The Russian ruble is the same situation. You talk about the Black Sea wheat, Russia, the largest wheat exporter in the world. And same thing with Argentina with El Peso. What was it, 2002? They were like 2-1. Now they're, 68-1? So that currency devaluation just makes it really tough for our U.S. farmers as they continue to expand their acres in South America. Hard to believe at these price levels, but they don't have our prices.
didn't they just see a record bean price, record cash bean price?
Exactly. I mean, Brazil, yeah. Because and why is it, Chip? Is because they sell in U.S. dollars and they buy right. in their currency. So that's the right. big switch right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Record bean prices in Brazil. It's not going to do much to slow things down on the production side there. Of course, you know, that their inputs cost more then as well, but because they pay for those inputs in reals. But, man, I tell you, when you get paid American dollars for those soybeans, it goes a long ways in a short period of time. We're talking with Don Rose, U.S. Commodities. When we come back, we need to dig more into the global demand picture on soybeans. And, of course, we got to get Don's take on what's happening in the livestock markets. That's next on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Brazil's Safrinha corn crop received welcome rains in the past 2 weeks. Australia is considering a WTO challenge on China's barley tariffs, but that won't deliver quick solutions. U.S. businesses are doubling down on China. From Popeyes to Walmart, Tesla to ExxonMobil, companies are betting that the country's long-term growth potential still outweighs the case against expansion. The Treasury Department has spent only $37.5 billion of a $500 billion pool of funds Congress provided to help struggling businesses. Malaysia plans to debut a B20 program in September, and Central Corn Belt Bankers report steady land values. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Yeah, and if you could, please go ahead and do that, because I try to watch Twitter while the show is going on, and every now and then somebody like Birdo will yes. throw something out there in our Twitter stream that, uh-huh. yeah, that number one, there's motion to it. So it's mm-hmm. constantly mm-hmm. catching my attention. Sure. The other thing is, I'll admit, okay, that's pretty funny, Birdo. That kind of makes me laugh. But you guys will have to check it out. And send me something so I can push that down the page and get it off my screen. We're talking to Don Rose, U.S. Commodities. Before we get back to that conversation, Davis, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Absolutely, sir. July hard red winter wheat was 3.5 cents higher at 508 1/4. July soft red fell 4.75 cents to 441 1/2. July corn futures were 0.5 cent higher at 321 1/4. December corn closed at 334 1/4. That's up 1.5 cents today. July bean futures 2.5 cents lower, 842 1/2. Novi beans closed at 850 1/4, down 2.5 cents. July cotton 140 points higher, 59.20. Dease cotton surged 124 to close at 59.17. June live cattle futures were a nickel higher, 98.77 1/2. August feeders off 62 1/2 to 131.92 1/2. And June lean hogs were a dollar lower, 56.65. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis, talking with Don Rose today from U.S. Commodities. Don, the bean demand situation here, USDA kind of shut off the export faucet for us in the last supply and demand report, took 100 million bushels out of the export estimate, put it straight to the bottom line on carryover. But it looks, but USDA certainly anticipates a recovery in the second, in the 2020-21 marketing year. A lot of that's got to be driven by the phase one agreement with China, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it does, Chip. And I think also they did the same thing with the corn exports, both bouncing back about 375 million. So, but you know, you talk about the exports at that, the number the government has is probably realistically 25 to 50 million still high. So your 580 million carryout could be closer to like the 630 or something like that. So, you know what's happened so far. South America has really been the aggressive seller to China, and China's been the big buyer there. So we've got work ahead of us. But the November-July 21 bean spread tells you that the trade, there's no carry in that market, pretty much flat, that we're banking on some big demand in the fall.
All right. What are you thinking as far as strategies go here on the grain side of things, Don? I'm not hearing a lot of urgency to get anything done right now.
Well, you know, I think the problem is, Chip, if you look at the old crop from a producer standpoint, if you haven't sold it, you're below the cost of production, particularly if you carried it over. So there's not much interest there. On the new crop, if you look at it, you've got your insurance rates that's given you your protection. So if you make hard sales here and we get into a dry drought pattern or some kind of weather market push back up someplace else around the world, now look what you have. You sold below the cost of production. And, you know, it looks like these payments that were just announced that, you know, soybeans could be up as much as 95 cents and corn could be up as much as 67 cents by the time you count the CARES and the CCC payment. So I think when the producer looks at this and sees this, of course, it's capped at $250,000 per entity, that I think the producer is going to be a little more confident that he can sit a little bit longer with old crop supplies than he did, you know, even a week ago today.
Right. Right. That $250,000 is per commodity per entity with a cap of...
It's for all commodities. It's $250,000 per person or entity for all commodities combined.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Yeah. A lot of details yet to for me to dig out of that announcement there, Don.
It is, but I tell you, they've got it pretty well across the board on grains and on livestock. So, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, what is the livestock situation? Is there any payments in there for the cow-calf or backgrounders?
For the cow-calf, all other cattle, $135 per head. So all other, I would say yes. They've got it for slaughter cattle, for feeders, more than 600 pounds, less than 600 pounds, all other cattle, slaughter cattle and mature cattle. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
The cow-calf
gotcha.
Operation looks like to me is covered, too.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. That is great to hear. Now, what are you making of what's going on in this cattle trade right now?
Well, you know, I think the first thing that you have is we continue to, no matter what happens, going forward, or in the past, we've got a lot of cattle that we're just pushing forward. Weights are up. The other thing that's happened, we probably have backed up, Chip, somewhere around 900,000 head of cattle. I mean, that we've just pushed forward because we can't slaughter them. We probably have 1 million feeder cattle that should have been in feedlots outside the feedlot. So I think if you look at it, and we've lost demand. If you didn't eat a hamburger yesterday, you're not going to eat two today. So you've lost demand. So I think it's just going to be a slugfest. You know, I don't always like to look at the government numbers and believe them, but I look at them. And the government has, I think it's too low, but they're at basically 98 to 100 from now all the way to April 1st. Well, we know we're trading cattle right now about 120. So they're not that optimistic. When you look at it going forward. So you got to respect that a little bit. And then, what's the economy going to look like? What's our demand going to look like, Chip?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And what the economy and the recovery looks like is going to tell us a lot about just how much we can, the consumers, how much beef they will be buying, because the price on the beef is going, Don. Because that historic run-up that we had in the boxed beef market, that was at least partially offset by Tyson saying, you know what, for most of this, for this week, we're going to knock another 20 to 30% off of that. So that delays the movement of those prices into the retail market. Hopefully, consumers will be pulling a paycheck again, or most of them, will be pulling some kind of a paycheck by the time the beef price increase makes its way to the retail level, I guess. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't know if it can happen or not.
Well, you know, and that's the whole government's program, is they're saying, listen, yeah, we just need everybody to stay the same as they were, because if we slow down too much or stop, we're not so sure we can ever get it restarted again, or it's going to take too long. So hopefully this spending spree actually works. I mean, it's supposed to. I guess there's no other choice if you take so we'll see. But that's it. You know, it's the supply side. There's too much meat coming at us. At the feedlot level on hogs and cattle, we're backed up, as we know, euthanizing hogs even. And then on the demand side, you know, we're not sure how strong it is because the supply is limited. So, and the prices are high. So it looks like I think you're in a slugfest with big supplies and demand slowing down as we hit the summer.
Okay. Jump over to hogs. You've already started to combine the conversation there. What are you hearing from your hog producers, Don?
Well, one, it's a big mess. You know, if the government is right, remember they said we're going to euthanize unbelievable 7.5 million head of hogs. I thought the number looked big, but the more I hear about it, what's happening on the ground level is it really has, reality hasn't hit totally 100%, because guys are supposed to get, we'll say, 8 loads in today. They can only get 4. They keep pushing things back at all levels. Well, once these hogs reach, we'll say, 350 pounds, you know, it's over, because now they can't make it through the chain speed anymore from a slaughter standpoint. So then that's the euthanizing point that you hit, which, by the way, is occurring in all different fashions. Of course, you're aborting some pigs at the same time. A month ago, I would say at least, when this hit, guys started putting additives in the ration so they wouldn't eat as much, so the feed didn't taste as good. So did those things, aborted sows right away. Guys were moving as fast as they could, but they're still growing. And we've reached that point now. We did kick our slaughter up last week to 2.1 million. Last week, this week we're probably going to be the same, but then we hit Memorial Day, and it's a real challenge, Chip. Yeah. The biggest issue, I would say, is as the slaughtering plants, most of them are up, the workforce is still spooked. Right. So they're still having troubles with workers, and how long does that go on? That's the question mark.
Yeah, it certainly is, and everybody keeps talking about how the target is to get back to 100% of capacity. Well, okay, that's great, and that's a really good goal, but in reality we need to run 115-120% of capacity, not for a few days but for a few weeks, to get caught up in this situation. And
Chip, I think even you know, if you look at it with all the stuff that we've done at the slaughtering plants, with the number of people that we're having that are still spooked by coming to work, to get back to 90-95% of capacity is probably about where you're going to be at.
Yep. I hear you, man. I hear you. So that's going to mean that's long-term changes for the industry right there. And we'll learn to deal with it. That's for sure. Don, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, sir. Thank you so much.
Yep. Good talking with you, Chip, and glad you had a good birthday.
You bet. You bet. All right, man. That is Don Rose, U.S. Commodities. When we come back, Davis and I will wrap up today's second hour of AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on for our family and yours.
Check that.
There's no hanging out in the coolest bars.
Some Nickelback on AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me. Good conversation there with Don Rose from U.S. Commodities.
Yeah.
Okay. There's two payment rates. It seems like it's been complicated, to the point that didn't need to be. here, but there's two payment rates. Farmers and ranchers will receive direct support drawn from two possible funding sources. The first source of funding is $9.5 billion in appropriated funding provided in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Stability Act. That's the CARES Act.
Okay.
To compensate farmers for losses due to price declines that occurred between mid-January 2020 and mid-April 2020 and provide support for specialty crops for product that had been shipped from the farm between the same time period but subsequently spoiled due to loss of marketing channels. So in other words, we lost the restaurant business, but the vegetables, the produce that had been shipped, if it spoiled, then there's compensation going back to the producer. The second funding source uses the Commodity Credit Corporation to compensate producers for $6.5 billion in losses due to ongoing market disruptions. Now, non-specialty crops eligible for CFAP payments.
Yeah, we lost you there for a second, Chip.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Would you throw in reverse and start again for us on where you just started?
Wow. Okay. So on the non-specialty crops?
That's yes. Where I need... Yes.
Okay.
Please.
Non-specialty crops eligible for CFAP payments include malting barley, canola, corn, upland cotton, millet, oats, soybeans, sorghum, sunflowers, durum wheat, and hard red spring wheat. Wool is also eligible. Producers will be paid based on inventory. See, then they put in this phrase. Will be based on inventory subject to price risk held as of Jan 15, 2020. A payment will be made based on 50% of a producer's 2019 total production or the 2019 inventory as of January 15, 2020, whichever is smaller, multiplied by the commodity's applicable payment rate. So it's that subject to price risk. If you still have it in inventory, but it's forward contracted for summer delivery, does it have price risk? And who's checking?
Ooh.
Yeah. I do know that this is going to be when you go in and you tell them what your inventory was between held as of Jan 15.
There you go.
When you go in and tell them what that inventory number is, it's going to be a trust factor. You've got to sign off that you are telling the truth and all this, and that you're subject to penalties later if you should lie, but they're going to trust you on what you say. So if you've got 50,000 bushel in the bin and 30 of it is forward contracted and 20,000 is open, the way I read this is it's 20,000 is what is eligible because the other 30,000 is forward contracted and therefore is not subject to price risk. But what if you just signed a basis contract? Because then you are subject to price risk. Wow. The payment rate on corn through the CARES Act is 32 cents per bushel. On the CCC payment rate, the CFAP payment rate is 35 cents. Soybeans, CARES 45 cents, CCC 50 cents. Now, let's drop down here to the livestock real quick. Eligible livestock, feeder cattle less than 600 pounds. Let's back up. Livestock eligible for CFAP include cattle, lambs, yearlings, and hogs. Total payment will be calculated using the sum of the producer's number of livestock sold between Jan 15 and April 15, 2020, multiplied by the payment rates per head and the highest inventory number of livestock between April 16 and May 14, 2020, multiplied by the payment rate per head. So marketing's between Jan 15 and April 15, and the highest inventory between April 16 and May 14. So the CARES Act Part 1, and then there's the CCC Part 2 on this on those feeder cattle less than 600 pounds. CARES Act payment is $102 per head. CCC Part 2 is $33 per head. Feeder cattle 600 pounds or more, $139. Part 2 is $33. You know what? On the Part 2 on this, all the cattle is at $33. So on the CARES Act, in other words, that which was marketed between Jan 15 and April 15, the feeder cattle 600 pounds and less, $102. 600 pounds and more, $139. Slaughter cattle, $214 a head. Slaughter cattle, mature cattle, $92 a head. And all other cattle, $102 per head. On the hogs and pigs for the CARES 1 Act, or Part 1, CARES Act Part 1, hogs and pigs less than 120 pounds is $28. 120 pounds or more, $18. And then on the lamb side of things, it's $33. And there's also a Part 2 CCC for the pigs less than 120 pounds. That's $17. And the 120 pounds or more is $17 on the hog side of things there too. So, guys, the best place to get the details on this, what I'm reading from is ProFarmer.com. Mm-hmm. So, okay. ProFarmer members, go there to get your details on it. I know that Wiesmeyer is digging through this stuff right now, trying to put as much perspective on it as they possibly can. So,
yeah. I can't get my head around any of this. I can't imagine being a farmer trying to wade through this. Just sitting here trying to figure it out for the broadcast. I want to slam my head in the drawer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I absolutely know what you mean. All right. Thanks, Davis. Go slam your head in the drawer. For
I
Davis,
believe I will.
And for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, we've got a Farmer Forum. Tomorrow afternoon, Ryan Wagner from Bolt Marketing.